Hey everybody, and welcome to the New Gamer Nation podcast. I am your host, Pilot, and with me today is Slacker.
Hello.
And we have special guests, Trevor.
Hello.
And Minnie.
Hey.
So we'd like to welcome everybody to the program today, as usual. Thanks for coming by, and let's get right into it, as we usually do, with what we are playing. So why don't you start us off, Slacker? What have you been up to?
Well, just mainly the big three that I've been playing for almost a couple months now, which would be God of War 2, Dragon Quest 4, and Uncharted. Mm-hmm. And no real updates. My feelings are basically unchanged on as from previous podcasts for all three games.
Did you get any further in God of War 2 with Perseus, or are you still up to that battle?
Oh, no, I finished that. I'm kind of struggling to figure out where to go right now, because they've got that there's like a puzzle you have to figure out immediately afterwards, and I'm stuck on that.
All right, well, so far so good.
Yeah, you know, it's a really fun game. I'm really enjoying it, and the fact that they're very short, both all three, but I've only played through two so far. That both God of War games so far are very short, I think, sort of keeps things fresh.
Yeah, well, I know especially with God of War 3, it's a little bit longer than the first two games, but I remember the first two games being particularly short. But, you know, it should certainly keep you entertained for another 15 hours per game or so. So, all right, so let's move over to you, Trevor. What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I actually haven't been playing a lot of modern games lately. I decided to dust off my old PlayStation and my Xbox, so I've sort of been playing a little bit of Final Fantasy IX, and I was playing Resident Evil 2 this morning. I felt like going retro this week. The only modern game I'm playing now is Tropico 3, which isn't really modern. It came out last year, and I'm only playing it, well, first I'm playing it because I get to be a dictator, and that's awesome, and build my own civilization. But on, I think it's August 26th, Tropico 4 comes out, and I really like the Tropico series, and I thought I'd get myself all revved up and excited for Tropico 4 by playing Tropico 3. So that's pretty much it for me right now.
Have you been playing Tropico 3 on the PC or the Xbox?
I'm playing it on the PC.
How is it going back to all those retro titles? Getting any graphic shock or anything like that?
Not really. I'm actually really happy that the PlayStation looks amazing on my 32-inch HD screen. And I thought it was going to be like a 640 by 480 resolution in the middle of my screen, and I'd be squinting to play it. But the graphics really aren't that terrible. Resident Evil 2, for instance, I'm playing their two discs, Claire and Leon. I'm on the Leon disc. I actually am really enjoying it, and I think I miss it, really. There are some great titles came out on the older systems, on PlayStation 1 and 2, and obviously on the old Xbox.
All right, so let's go over to you, Minnie. What have you been up to?
Well, I finally managed to finish Lost Odyssey 3 for the third time now. But I've got to the point where I'm achievement hunting now, and I'm so serious about this third playthrough that I have like tick boxes, because I'm actually quite pathetic and I want to find it all. So I have I have lists of, like, there's an achievement for Treasure Trove, which means you have to pick up every single item in the field. So I had like tick boxes. I was ticking them off as I was going along, picked up the last one, and my achievement did not pop up. So now I am gutted. I have no idea what I've missed. So I'm either going to have to just, like, root around the world, which I just can't be bothered. I just don't want to do it. But I so want this achievement third time round. I think it would be such a waste. But still love that game, though, so I'm happy. I finally finished that. But the main one, again, is Bioshock. I've progressed since last time, and my mind has been blown. It's such a good game, actually. I'm so glad I picked it up after, like, not just replaying something like Assassin's Creed again or Pokemon, as I have been doing. But yeah, to anyone who's played Bioshock, the whole would you kindly thing, that'll ring quite a bell. And it's just such a great story, so I'm really looking forward. Nearly finished that, but I've kind of got to the point where I'm actually quite scared of playing it. Like, I'll put it off because I just find it quite a scary game. It's quite nerve-wracking. But yeah, that's an awesome game. And a bit of Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer. Just stabbing people, you know, 10 minutes free time. Nothing like a good sort of wander around, just multiple stabbings. I really enjoy that multiplayer. But yeah, much of the same for me, really. Nothing new at the moment.
Well, it certainly sounds like you had plenty on your plate to begin with. But that's good. Glad you're enjoying. So I'll review quickly. I have been playing Shadows of the Damned, going through a second playthrough. It's been good. It's a good game. So I've been enjoying that. Played a little bit of Civilization V, as I normally do. that's probably going to be a running theme throughout. I'll always probably play that in some form or another. But it was, you know, it's a good game. And it's a lot of fun. Continue with Catherine, and it's really getting difficult.
Well, the puzzles.
Yeah, all those puzzles are really getting difficult. And I'm playing it on normal, and I'm really trying not to bump it down to easy, but
I know the feeling.
It may get to that point.
It sounds like you're starting to get a little frustrated.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Japanese games, is that they just brought up on a whole different level of difficulty than we were. You know, they're used to these games that are just impossible to beat. You know, the kind of games that are just memorization down to the T. You know, where you got to know, you know, left, right, up, down, A, B, without even looking at the screen, you should know how to beat the level. So they, you know, they're brought up on that kind of difficulty. But then when those kinds of games come out here, we just freak out and can't finish them. So that's kind of what I'm going through right now, where it's just becoming numbingly difficult. But I'm determined to beat it, so we'll see what happens. I have been playing a couple of new games since we last spoke. So I did start playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer, inspired by you, Minnie. I knew
enjoying
that.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really different. It's really pretty fun, especially for those that are really used to Call of Duty kind of multiplayer.
It's so much better. It's so much less, like, you don't panic about your KDR or anything, because it's not about how many people you kill, it's how well you kill them.
No, that's true. And you could certainly tell, you know, the difference between the people that have been playing and the people that just started. For those that don't know what we're talking about, you know, in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer, you play a character in a town, and the town is fully populated, full of people, and you're given a target to go after in this town, and all they give you is an indicator as to where your target is and what they look like, and you have to determine which one of these people in the town is your target. And they kind of throw you off the beaten path because there are a number of different civilians that look like your target. So it's all about stealth and being cunning and, you know, trying to throw your assailants off while going after targets yourself.
We got to, like, pick up on people's little cues because, you know, only players who are playing will actually run and stuff. And it's really, you got to really keep your eyes open. It's kind of, it's really unnerving, actually.
Yeah, no, it definitely does a lot of things that, you know, games haven't done before in that setting. You know, and you really have to pay attention to the way characters move. You know, if one character is, like, walking in a weird direction or whatever, you know, walking through certain gates, you know, like that normal characters wouldn't walk through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really got to pay attention to those kinds of things. So it's been really cool. I liked it a lot. And I was inspired to do that since I played all the way through Assassin's Creed 2. And I originally thought this game was multiplayer only because they stressed it so much, but it turns out there's a whole story and everything else combined, and of course, you know, I want 100% on all the achievements, so I have to start knocking out the multiplayer, which takes a very long time to get all the trophies for that.
I had a lot of beginner's luck. I started it like a couple of weeks ago and managed to get about 5 achievements in one go, just in like the first couple of playthroughs, and since then I've just sucked.
Wow.
Been really bad. But I managed to get most of the achievements the first go, though, so I'm fine. There's a few, though, like getting to level 50. That's not going to happen for a while. Good Lord.
So well, it sounds like there's a bit of a learning curve with this, where, like, you don't, like, because there's clearly people that have been playing for a while, and then if you just jump in, there's an adjustment period you go through.
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually, if it's ranked. Like, I don't know whether it's a bit like Halo, where they start you off with people who actually are at your level, or whether it's just like COD, where they throw you in.
If there's enough people playing online that's your level, they'll group you with those people that are your level.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay. But that's why I have
them. Yeah, but if there's not enough people to fill a match, anybody that's on is going to go in there.
Right.
So it depends when you play. I've played times where I was among people the same level, and then I've played games where we've had a couple of level 50s in there. You know, it all depends. But there is a distinct disadvantage if you play with people that are a lot higher than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get perks and weapons and things like that you don't have access to at level 1. And, you know, all these things are connected to level. But if you can only get one match, then you got to take what you can get. But I've been playing that. And last but not least, I've been playing Total War Shogun 2. For those that remember, I was playing Total War Rome about a month ago, and I wanted to play the most recent game, and this is the most recent game in the Total War series, and I like it a lot. You know, the graphics are obviously improved. There's a lot of new features in the game that are pretty interesting. You know, the art style is really cool with like the Japanese sumi-e painting kind of look to it. You know, it's really cool. It's a really neat game, and it's a shame that more people don't play that because it's a PC game. But you know, it's been good. It's been a lot of fun. So let's get on with the program and talk about our first topic of the day, which is the acquisition of Sucker Punch from Sony Studios. As some of you may or may not know, Sucker Punch was acquired by Sony, and they are the creators of the Sly Cooper series and most recently the Infamous series. So why don't you start us off, Slacker, and let us know what your reaction to the news was?
I mean, it seems like kind of like a no-brainer. I mean, Sucker Punch exclusively develops for Sony, you know, so no big news there. So it just seemed kind of like a no-brainer to me.
Do you think that this is going to be an advantage for Sony to have them as part of this core group, or a disadvantage?
I would lean slightly towards disadvantage. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Sucker Punch exclusively developed for Sony. So what do they gain by acquiring Sucker Punch? So I guess on, you know, that regard, it's kind of a little confusing.
Well, they did get to own the Infamous brand.
Right.
So they're going to own Infamous, and they'll be able to do whatever they want to do with Infamous, where Sucker Punch owned the rights to it beforehand, and even though it was just a Sony exclusive, once that exclusive deal ran out, they could have sold Infamous to Xbox as well, or could have just produced multi-platform games from Infamous.
So really, it's a matter of creative control.
Pretty much. I mean, it really depends on how you look at it. It's just a benefit or disadvantage, depends on how you like it. But what about you, Trevor? What was your core reaction to it?
I think it's a good thing. I think anytime you bring, especially a studio that's producing exclusive content for your company into your company and bring it in-house, I think what Slacker said about creative control, they're going to have much more creative control over what's coming out. They're also going to have intellectual property, like you guys are saying. So they're going to make money off these games, and they can also prevent the games from going to the Wii U or the next Xbox. So I think it's a great idea. They can probably cut a lot of costs, maybe combine development teams. And it's not uncommon for this to happen. You know, EA has bought a bunch of companies. What is it, PopCap and BioWare. And so it's sort of the trend for, and I think Activision bought a bunch of people too, but it's sort of the trend of these larger companies, developments and publishing companies, to buy up the little guys and bring them in. And I think it's a good thing. I would be happy with one or two big development companies and one or two publishers. I think that way it's, you'll end up with a lot more sequels. You'll end up with a lot more control on the system. So you won't have like FF15 on the Xbox and then FF15 on the PlayStation. I think it's great that they bought Sucker Punch.
All right. So what about you, Minnie? What was your core reaction to it?
I'm a bitter Xbox owner, so I don't care. But no, really. I do care. It's still important. It seems sort of like the next step, really, because, I mean, Sucker Punch are already making things exclusive for Sony anyway, so I suppose it just gives them security to make sure they don't run off and, you know, into dalliances with their enemies. But hopefully they don't exert too much creative control, because, I mean, obviously Sucker Punch have been doing just dandy on their own, so hopefully they don't, you know, try and elbow their way in there too much. But it's just, yeah, another way just to gain a little bit more security for themselves for all the future. And it sort of seemed just, yeah, it seemed like it was going to happen anyway. So good luck to them. Hope it goes well. And until I get a PS3, I'm just going to be a little bit sad about it.
Well, first you need to get yourself a PlayStation. But
I so do. I've always been like, oh, I love my Xbox. And I do. But I do really miss out on all the exclusives that you guys have. I really want to play Uncharted. Seriously.
Yeah, well, it's game of the year for a reason. Just saying.
God.
just saying. Oh, like you know, like you guys have been saying, it's a good move for Sony. They're going to be able to market the Infamous brand. They're going to be able to, you know, market the Sly Cooper brand as well. And you know, you're going to see futures for those franchises for sure. I mean, those are the whole reason they bought it.
Are they even doing another Sly Cooper?
Yes, Sly Cooper 4 is coming out soon. You know, because those two companies, like those two products have, you know, already hit the shelf, you know, it just made sense for Sony to own it so that they can really take advantage of the marketing opportunity they have. I mean, it does less for Sucker Punch than it does for Sony, but Sony's paying for that, so it's okay. And, you know, it does make for a good, you know, a good environment for Sucker Punch to grow. You know, they'll get a lot more technical support. You know, they'll have the ability to, you know, work with Sony and get Sony's hardware before anybody else and be able to, you know, produce more titles. So you'll definitely be seeing Sucker Punch around for a while. But I don't know that it's necessarily better for Sucker Punch, only in the fact that now they lose the control that they had over their products. Even though I'm sure Sony's not going to go in there and say, okay, you need to scrap everything and start again, you know, they're still not going to have as much of a say in it as they would have had otherwise. And, you know, it's acquisitions like those that really make it difficult to like these mergers, because you lose the kinds of games that would have changed the way that we game in general.
So you think that games are, in general, going to get more formulaic?
Well, at least Sucker Punch's games will probably become more formulaic. I mean, you'll definitely see an Infamous 3, and it probably won't be vastly different than Infamous 2, which wasn't vastly different from Infamous 1 anyways, but, you know,
we're
it's
not
just,
onto a winner here.
Yeah, it just ensues the same thing. And it's not that Infamous isn't a good game, because it is. It's just, it's not different enough for my tastes, and now that's just going to ensure that it's not going to be different enough for my tastes. Which, you know, it depends on what side of the fence you want. I mean, if you like sequels and you like seeing your favorite characters over and over again, then that's a good thing, and this should be great. But if not, if you're on the other side where you like to see new things, you know, this isn't a good move as far as that goes.
Don't you think that this is security for a good title? Sucker Punch is never going to go out of business now because they're a part of Sony. So there's no possibility that there won't be an Infamous 3. I feel like it's a form of job security.
Well, it is job security for the Sucker Punch people, because like you said, now that Sony just shelled out, you know, millions and millions of dollars, they're not going to let this studio go under anytime soon.
Yeah, that's my
point. All the programmers there can breathe a sigh of relief that they're not going to, their jobs are not necessarily tied to the success of their next title. But, you know, there's disadvantages too. You know, now the guy that invented Cole in Infamous doesn't have control over him like he used to, which, again, it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing. I mean, it really depends on how the future of these titles are going to go. You know, but it's not like Sony companies haven't worked out before. I mean, look at Naughty Dog. You know, they weren't really doing a whole lot, and then all of a sudden they get a deal to, you know, make Jack and Dexter, and then that was a smash hit, and then Uncharted. And now they're one of the biggest, hottest game developers around. So, I mean, it can go either way. It really depends on how things are going to play out. But, you know, my immediate reaction is, all right, I guess we'll see. I'm cautiously pessimistic, I suppose. We'll see what happens. We'll see what comes of it. All right, so let's shift over quickly to the second segment, which is a little bit meatier, and that is violence in video games in general. There was an article that came out in Game Informer that basically said that a British policeman came out and blamed Grand Theft Auto for the riots in London. That on its own is a crazy statement, but there have been a lot of these statements made in general recently about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and numerous other games being blamed for acts of violence. I'd like to open up the floor to you, Minnie, since this seems to hit a lot closer to home for you.
Well, yeah, it's on my doorstep, so to speak. But it was a matter of time. I mean, yeah, obviously, if you're not sure, the London riots at the moment happened on Saturday in Tottenham, massive hoo-ha about that, and basically whole of London is, everyone's just getting very angry at the moment. But it was a matter of time before someone came out and said, oh my God, all these kiddies playing Call of Duty. It's been used before. I think it's a need for someone to blame something apart from what is probably amounts to government issues, social issues, all that social side of things. But, yeah, I've never held any stock in the fact that I don't think, unless you have a problem sort of initially, I very much doubt that violent video games are going to exacerbate that problem. Obviously, you don't give them to kids. That's why we have ratings, and that's pretty much established. You know, you don't give Call of Duty to a young child, even though I very much doubt it would have a big problem. But it's just not what they, it's not good for that point in their development. They don't need all the explosions, the guns, the blood. It's just, that's not what they're meant to have in that stage of their development. So you just don't give it to them.
Yeah, I could certainly see your point, and I certainly agree with that too. I mean, I even go to the point where I think you could give video games to children, and there wouldn't really be that much of a problem as long as you're doing your due diligence as a parent. I mean, if you're sitting down and talking with your children and saying, you know, what you see in these video games is a game, and teach them the difference between, you know, fantasy and reality, that you can establish that boundary that the kids won't necessarily mm-hmm. cross.
There was a study recently in the UK, actually, in Huddersfield, in the university, where, I mean, it pretty much confirmed all that we thought, was that things like Call of Duty aren't going to make you angry because you don't have an experience. You've never killed someone. You don't feel that sort of anger when you, so they did brain scans and things. And when people killed someone in Call of Duty, there was nothing. But what made people really, really angry was things like FIFA, because everyone has that feeling of conceding a goal, or, you know, the other, own goals or something, or missing a tackle. And that's what actually made people genuinely angry. And they were getting extremely aggressive because they felt that feeling. It was very close to home. So, I mean, when someone conceded a goal in FIFA, their brain scans went through the roof. But Call of Duty made no impression upon them because they haven't killed anyone. It's just not a life experience that we have. So all these people going on about violent video games really probably need to think about the things that are a bit closer to home.
All right, so why don't you let us know what you've been thinking, Trevor. Give us your opinion.
My astute opinion.
Of course, expert only.
Expert only, yes. I'll start quoting scientific evidence. All I have to say about this is I don't think that a video game makes someone kill someone. It's the same way as if you give a child a hunting rifle and you go hunting for ducks, he's not going to go out and shoot 10 people the next day. That's not normal behavior. But I do think that our environment shapes us as people. And for a young child to start playing Mortal Kombat or Call of Duty or Silent Hill at the age of 5 may change their viewpoints or warp their views a little bit, maybe desensitize them. I think if anything, if we're going to have a discussion about video game violence, it should be about people becoming basically desensitized and not seeing violence as something bad or something wrong. And we sort of get used to it. But the American media, and I don't know how the British media is, but the American media is flooded with violence. It's flooded with negativity. So if we're going to say that environmental stimuli from video games is causing riots, why not Fox News or CNN or MSNBC? You turn them on and all it is violence, and murder. So I don't want to lay blame on video games. Sort of like that, you know, people kill people, guns don't kill people, so games don't kill people either. But I think if you are a sick person, and I was getting this from you guys, if you are a sick person and you are a murderer and you were on a brain scan machine, you probably would get excited strangling someone in Hitman Blood Money or, you know, shooting someone in Call of Duty. But that's not really the typical demographic, I think, for video games, serial killers and murderers. So I think in this London situation, the politician or the individual, whoever blamed this, was just using it as a scapegoat, plain and simple, instead of acknowledging that, you know, the austerity measures are pissing people off or, you know, whatever else is going on socially or politically with the economy, which I'm sure that had a lot to do with this riot. So yeah, pure scapegoating. That's my view on it.
All right, so let me give you the floor, Slacker. Why don't you tell us what your core reactions to this is?
I'm sort of in the same camp as Trevor, in that, you know, to pin it purely on video games, there's so many other forms of violent media out there that it's pretty tough to just pin it on video games, in particular Grand Theft Auto. Now, of course, Grand Theft Auto is violent, but I, you know, you'd have to give me a little more information. You know, you'd have to work a little harder to link Grand Theft Auto to London riots. I mean, it just, you know, I think there's other things going on there. And, you know, I kind of feel like the measures are in place for parents, for guardians to sort of appropriately handle things. I mean, you know, you can put parental codes on the PlayStation that restrict violent content, you know, and I find it hard to believe that, you know, the riots in London are caused solely by Grand Theft Auto.
No, I'm sure that they're not implying that the video games are the sole reason for the riots, that, you know, people just keep getting camped and now they're going to start rioting. I mean, I don't think there's such a direct correlation to it. But you know, what the article is basically saying is that the video games have given them the tools to operate weapons and be able to organize and kill people in that fashion.
I'm unconvinced.
Yeah, that's nonsense. If you put an M16 in my hand, I'd probably shoot my foot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, right. I have shot so many guns in Call of Duty, but if you gave it to me and I had to actually load the damn thing, I would inevitably hurt myself.
I don't even think I know how to turn the safety off.
there's definitely some buttons.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the impression that video games in general have been leaving, that they're such a strong simulation for the real thing that if you play enough of it, you would know how to do all these things. And, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily based on experience or whatever, but I know personally, you know, I still don't know how to operate a tactical nuke just by watching Call of Duty, so.
Well, the likelihood of you coming into contact with a tactical nuke. And, I mean, if you ever did, you know, just, I don't know, save the world or something, you'd be the man to call, but I very much doubt you're going to need to operate a tactical nuke.
No, it's true.
But hey, good to know.
Yeah, but according to these people, you are an expert.
I can see what I was saying before about environmental stimuli. I could see someone, let's say they're in a riot and they're throwing rocks or they're whatever they're doing, they're up against a bunch of police officers. They may think, oh, I'll get a bottle, I'll put some alcohol in it, or maybe they have a bottle of vodka with them, they're riding drunk, and they decide to put a piece of cloth in there and light it and throw it. Now, would I know what a Molotov cocktail was if I hadn't originally played Max Payne back when I was like 15 or 16? No, I wouldn't. And maybe I would have gotten that idea from that video game. So I can definitely play devil's advocate and point to, you know, blowing a car up or burning a car. Why do they always burn cars? Because they saw it maybe in riots in Syria or in Iraq, and they thought, oh, we should do that too. Or are they getting it from TV or video games or movies? So I definitely can see where you can say, like, certain aspects of the riot can be linked to games or different media, but I don't think the riot itself can be linked, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, but by the same token, I suppose you could. It's very hard to differentiate from movies to video games because, yeah, I mean, Molotov cocktails come up in films all the time. Who could say where anyone could learn how to do that? I mean, I learned by watching a episode of Silent Witness here. It's like a crime drama that the best way to kill yourself isn't to cut your wrist, but to cut at your elbow. Like, it's you could then blame them for like a higher rate of teen suicide or something because they can do it more effectively. But it's very hard to you know, link. But yeah, I think I probably would agree to that extent.
Well, I'll take it a step further then. What about intent? I mean, just because you know how to make a Molotov cocktail, does video games give you the urge to go out and use it against somebody?
No, but I think it gives you the idea. That's what I'm talking about, the idea, not the intent.
No, I know what you're saying, that you're talking about the idea. Just by walking down the street, somebody can get the idea, you know, even outside of media itself. Like, if you just witness a crime, you now have noticed that, hey, I can shoot somebody in the head and they don't move anymore. You know, so at what point do you become responsible for your actions? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get exactly what you're saying.
All right, well, we're running a little long on this, so let's pause for now, and we'll come right back and continue the discussion right after this. continue our discussion about violence in video games. So I believe you were talking, Trevor?
About
violence in video games.
Yes.
I think I was talking about the point where you have to kind of take responsibility for your own actions. I mean, I know that people say, well, video games influenced me and gave me ideas and implanted the thought into my head. But at what point are you responsible for your own actions? You know, like at what point do you say, okay, it's mine now. You have to own it.
In our society, if you drink and drive and you kill someone, you cannot tell the judge, I was drunk. I didn't mean to do it. So I think that if you were to commit a crime, the culpability falls with you, with the person. And responsibility, what you're saying, is with the person. It's rarely going to be with the medium. It goes the same with people who incite violence, like people are on the radio telling people to kill each other. It's the people who take that message and then actually act on it and do it. They're the criminals. Now, the person spewing the hate or delivering it obviously shouldn't be doing that. But in the end, it's that individual who needs to know better or shouldn't be listening or watching or doing and not commit the crime in the first place.
Well, it's certainly a case of, you know, sticks and stones. You know, you can you could say anything you want. And it's up to the individual to act on whatever they feel necessary to act upon. But we're constantly seeing, you know, video games being blamed and, you know, legislation trying to be passed to limit, you know, the imagery on video games. What's your personal theory as to why video games are taking the brunt of the quote-unquote influence on these kinds of crimes?
They're prevalent. They're prevalent. A lot of people play them. They're everywhere. They're popular. It's the same back when comic books were the it thing. Parents used to blame comic books for odd behavior of their children, and they would take the comic books away. I think it's something that's identifiably young. It's something that the older, scared population, the dying off population, as I like to call them, the ones who are kind of, you know, they're scratching at the ground and death is dragging them away and saying, you can't have video games, you can't have radio, damn you and your Elvis gyrations, you know. I'm serious. It's a generational thing, and really we should be saying, no, it's your dentures that are causing violence. No, it's, you know, it's I don't know, the Benny Hill show, that's what's causing violence. But it doesn't work that way. They're not in control. It's the 80-year-old senators who think the internet is made up of a series of tubes and dump trucks, and they don't understand the technology. They don't realize this is a revolution of technology and a great thing for kids to communicate with each other through multiplayer games, and that for them, like I said, they just don't understand it, so they have to hate it, they have to attack it. And until they die off, till death takes them away, we're going to be hearing this crap for a long time. But it's most definitely not true. At least I think it's not true. And I think that's what we're all basically saying.
All right, well, what about you, Slacker? What, basing upon the same things that we've just been talking about, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, you know, there's certainly, I think that the popularity of video games has something to do with it. I think that they're sort of at the forefront. But I want to throw in something else, and that's kind of the interaction. Whereas in a movie or in a comic book or, you know, other forms of media, you're merely watching it. In the video games, you're sort of acting it out. And I think the fact that you're acting out something violent, like, say, in a God of War where you rip somebody's arm off, or in a Grand Theft Auto where you're actually shooting the gun, or so because you're acting it out, I think that that has something to do with people targeting video games.
Well, is it the actual violence itself, or is it the illusion of free will?
I would say it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. I mean, because you're actually you're controlling the action. And you're controlling a violent action. And because you're controlling a violent action, that's sort of a step into taking the own action, the action yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess as far as what I was referring to that was, you know, how much control do you really have in a video game other than the decision to get that guy.
Well, you know, I mean, your control is clearly limited to the scope of the video game. You know, I'm not sure what you.
Well, no, it is. You know, of course, it's limited to the scope of the video game. But is there, you know, what's the correlation between, you know, just pushing a button and killing somebody as opposed to like a killing simulate where you would take a dummy and stab it with a knife? I mean, wouldn't actually taking a weapon and actually hitting an object have much more of an impact than just pushing a button? I mean, to me, it doesn't seem like there's really that much control over the killing action itself.
Well, no. I mean, all I'm merely suggesting is that video games are more interactive than movies, whereas in movies you're just watching it. You know, maybe that slight level of actually like doing it makes video games a target for media saying, hey, you know, these are more violent, we should ban these. That's all I'm saying.
You know, I get it, but I'm even debating that fact that you have more control,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that, you know, pushing a button, you know, the difference between a violent action in a film and a violent action in a video game is at right now a button press.
So you feel, and it sounds like in your mind the difference is negligible.
Yeah, I feel that it is negligible. I mean, if you see a movie of somebody shooting someone in the head, or you pushing a button and then that person shoots them in the head, I don't see a difference. But you say you do see a difference?
Like me personally, I'm able to draw the line. But I just think that maybe that's one thing in the mind of people that are sort of targeting video games. You know, I just think that maybe they see it as, you know, a step in the direction of, you know, because you're simulating that action, albeit a button press. I think that maybe they see that even a simulating action as kind of like, whoa, hey, this is, we got to do something about this.
Okay.
You probably see it as intent. It's like by pressing that button, you want to kill that person. Is that sort of
right?
Well, even if the game forces your hand.
Yeah. But then also they do lay the blame at the developers as well. They think, why does everyone have to make everything violent? Why can't we just all play Viva Pinata or something? It's that sort of thing. I mean, yeah, I still don't agree. I agree like you. I say I can draw the line. I don't, from killing someone, you know, to pressing a button to, you know, shoot someone's face off, and actually shooting someone's face off, there is a big difference, and I think you have to be a very certain, specific person to, you know, to want to do that.
You know, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think we're all in agreement here, but it's just...
We're trying to see the other side of the argument, like, why are video games being targeted?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a generational thing because these, you know, we live in a society today, you know, across the globe that whenever something bad happens, somebody has to be at fault. You know, like nobody ever acknowledges the failure of a system. It's always the individuals that take the blame. So, you know, back in the, you know, the 50s, it was rock and roll that's causing people to do bad things. And, you know, then it was music, and then it was, you know, television, and then it was movies, and, you know, so on and so forth. I mean, there's always going to be somebody saying it's got to be something that caused this person to do that. Like, there's no such thing as a bad person, you know, and nobody wants to admit that. Like, nobody wants to admit, especially if you're a parent, that you have a bad kid.
I think, you know, people, like, yeah, people struggle with the, the fact that when games, I mean, only 40 years it's taken for us to get to something, from something like Pong to something like Call of Duty or Battlefield or something. I think people are just scared of the fact that when games first came out, they were pretty much for kids. It was tennis games. It was really, really simple things that pretty much only appealed to kids. I think people struggle with the fact that we've moved on from kids' games. We make games now for adults. That's how it goes.
Well, and that's the whole thing now, is that the average gamer now is 39, 40?
So, yeah, I've heard 32, but it's definitely around the 30 to 40 bracket.
Yeah, somewhere between 30 and 40. I mean, I guess it depends where you hear it from, but either way, all those people that picked up video games long ago have grown up. So you can't continually make kids' games because now there's gamers out there that don't play kids' games. So, you know, you have to move on with your audience. I mean, the same thing kind of happened with, like, the Harry Potter audience in general.
Whee!
Yeah, I mean, people, like, loved the first book. It had a very light and airy tone, and, you know, everybody thought, wow, this is great for kids. But, you know, J.K. Rowling grew up. And, you know, the people that she was writing for grew up. So you adapt the story to fulfill that audience. Mm-hmm. But now you get to a point where... people started pushing back because they thought that this was a kid's thing and it's not a kid's thing. But, you know, at what point do you think that they should break off from this? That they should, you know, look at things a little more fundamentally?
I don't think we'll ever stop blaming something. And you can sort of understand it's human nature to want to blame something other than yourselves or humanity in general or something. So I think as long as, I mean, most gamers understand, and I think most gamers are of the mind that, no, it doesn't cause violence. You know, people cause violence, that sort of thing. So I think we'll just continue to take it on the chin as usual and take every sort of statistic with a pinch of salt when, you know, especially like in this country, we have the Daily Mail, which is just a god-awful piece of paper, just a waste of paper, basically, waste of trees. And it always constantly spouts stuff like, you know, oh my God, immigration, or oh my God, video games. So we just think we learn to deal with it. I don't know if it'll ever stop or it might move on to something else. That would be useful.
You see, I almost beg to differ at this point because if you go to sleep and you wake up and then all of a sudden there's a giant hole in your windshield and you look inside and there's, you know, a little meteorite or something, right? It's happened before. You know, who are you going to blame? You can't blame anybody. You know, the asteroid fell from the sky and it landed on your car and broke your windshield. And then you just say, okay, and you move on. You may not be happy about it, but you move on. Mm-hmm. But it's these kinds of issues where people fail to come to the realization that sometimes something was just going to happen. Like it was meant to be. Like even recently with the shootings in Norway, you know, that particular individual had a copy of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And they said that this was, you know, a leading factor in the reason why he went out and killed all those people. And it says, like, if you look at the guy, like, he even looks like a killer. But, I mean, there was other signs that pointed to these things. But yet they still latch on to the fact that this person played video games. So
yeah, I mean it's sort of like this. I mean, you know, violent people are gonna have violent tendencies, and you know, so is Call of Duty violent? Yes, but a majority of the audience that plays Call of Duty can draw the line. I mean, you only hear about isolated incidents of these, you know, shootings. I mean, you know, this year it's Norway. A couple years ago, it was Virginia Tech. A few years before that, it was Columbine. I mean, by and large, these are isolated incidents. And, you know, violent people are just going to have violent tendencies. So, you know, violent people are going to want to play violent video games. It's just the matter of they can't draw the line between fantasy and reality.
Well, you see, I almost go to the point where violent people are going to act violently, whether influenced or not.
Right.
I mean, it's
inborn.
Yeah. I mean, whether they get violent music, they watch violent movies, they play violent games, they're still going to be violent. I mean, there have been serial killers forever. I mean, what do you have to say about Jack the Ripper? He wasn't playing Call of Duty. he didn't watch violent movies or listen to violent music, but he still went out there and he killed people. And I think, you know, violence is just ingrained in some people.
Right, right.
So, you know, whether, you know, like I said, whether you're playing violent games or not, violent people are going to be violent one way or another. I think it's just a fact of society, unfortunately. But, all right, so let's move on to the next segment here, which is our most favorite and most hated gameplay elements. And I changed the mood up a little bit. You know, we all have our favorite games. And, you know, as you look at the games that we play in general, you see that, you know, good games do certain things and bad games do certain things, and they all kind of stick to their individual elements in general. You know, and I'll start the conversation off by saying that I despise games that don't let you skip cutscenes.
I don't know, maybe it's my tendency. I love watching cutscenes.
No, I love watching cutscenes too. And I'll even say I hate games that don't let you either skip them or pause them.
Oh, yeah, I have to pause them. That's just outrageous. If they don't let you do that, then just, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because, I mean, the feeling of being tethered to my game makes me nervous.
Just I might miss something if someone comes in, you know, rains on my parade, like my brother running in.
Yeah, or, you know, whatever the reason is, whether you're, you know, you get a phone call in the middle of it or an email or something that you have to tend to. And, you know, this game just says, no, you have to pay attention to me or you're missing the story.
Yes, outrageous.
And it seems like awful games always do this, too. Like, they just they know that they're awful games, and they say, no, you better pay attention to every second when I tell you to pay attention to them. Otherwise, you're missing this whole thing.
You will listen to everything I have to say.
Exactly. And if you don't, then you're missing most of the story, and you're just going to have to watch it again. I mean, you know, personally, that's one of the worst things for me.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
So what about you, Slacker? What's an example of one of your most hated gameplay elements?
I would have to say that, you know, for me, I enjoy exploring 3D environments. And so games that I feel like kind of fence me in, that kind of lead me sort of down a path with very little of my own decision making to, kind of explore. I feel like when I'm fenced in, like when I can't explore my environment, that kind of frustrates me.
You mean like playing a linear game?
Right. Like, I mean, you know, in particular, I mean, like Final Fantasy 13 was a little frustrating like that, where basically you felt like for the first, I don't know, 20 hours of gameplay, you could only go forwards or backwards. There was very little side-to-side action. Some of the Tomb Raider games made me feel like that. I mean, you know, they would show you like this beautiful 3D environment, and then you'd go wandering around the 3D environment and bump into an invisible wall. And like, you know, there's like plenty of stuff that you can see beyond the wall, but like, you know, you can't go. Like, it's like it's almost like you're miming, like you're stuck in a box, you know, like I can't get out. But, you know, just really being fenced in and not allowed to explore kind of frustrates me.
What about you, Trevor? Is there something in particular that gets under your skin?
Well, I'm with Slacker on the whole being pushed forward through the game with no possibility to go back. I know when I used to play Final Fantasy VII, I loved just jumping in my airship and flying around the world and going, you know, going, doing a chocobo race or farming for guys to fight and level up. So I like that sandbox, open, non-linear type world. But something I was thinking of while you're talking about the cutscenes is in the Gears of War games, when Marcus gets a message or he starts talking to the lady up in the helicopter, I can't remember her name. It doesn't cut to a cutscene, and you're able to walk around. You're like walking around really, really slow, so you're still in the game, but you're not able to do anything, and you're watching a cutscene. I'd rather it just cut and then see him walking around and talking and being able to skip through that than just being able to walk around like a snail talking to this lady on my intercom. And the whole time I'm thinking, well, what if can I get attacked during this period, or is this period where I can't get attacked? Like, am I playing? Am I not playing? I really didn't like that part of the game. And either, you know, be a cutscene or don't be a cutscene. And then you have, in some games I remember, you have like the full CGI screen where it's like beautiful and everything. And then you have like the cheap cutscenes with subtitles. And like sometimes they give you like the cheap crappy one. And then sometimes they give you like the really cool one they spend a lot of money on. Like you had that a lot in the Final Fantasies. I'd rather have the really cool, pretty ones rather than the really stupid ones where they look like your characters do in the normal game, but they're just talking. So, you know, they got to make up their mind.
So what about you, Minnie? Is there something that gets under your skin?
I can't think of an example now, but I remember I hate it when, like, radial menus or something don't pause, or, like, inventories. If you do not pause the game when you bring up your inventory, I cannot deal with that. any radial menus you have to bring up or any selections you're making, you have to pause the game. There was one game I remember playing recently, I'm trying to think of what it was, but, like, it didn't pause. You had to sort of think about it in the middle of a battle. It was just too much for my tiny brain. I didn't like it at all. But also, I like to replay scenes, specifically cutscenes, actually, because obviously, yeah, like Trevor said, some cutscenes are really, really cool. And it's not that I just want to watch them, but maybe sometimes I do, you know? And I like to be able to replay just missions as well, because if you don't want to have to play through the whole game. Sometimes you don't want to play through the whole game again. You want to play through a specific really, really cool, you know, to show a friend or just do it again because you want to do it a different angle. I quite like to be able to replay sort of Assassin's Creed style, Assassin's Creed 2 style, replay memories or replay, sorry, not memories, replay just events without having to go through the whole game again.
Yeah, I noticed that good games tend to allow you to replay certain chapters or sections,
mm-hmm.
You know, especially for those that have collectibles, because that's the worst too. If you have collectibles and you can't replay chapters, that's a big no-no. You know,
I don't really like collectibles either.
I'm not a fan of collectibles either, but I could, you know, I know there's people out there that like it, so I wouldn't want to rain on everybody's parade by taking out completely. But, you know, if you gotta have collectibles, then I think you gotta have the ability to choose which chapter you go to.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially like when they tell you, you know, you need to find, you know, 12 apples, and they give you a counter on the side that says, you found 4 out of 12 apples or whatever.
Yeah, that was good. Assassin's Creed 2 did that, even though I didn't like their collectibles because there was nothing cool to, apart from achievement, which I suppose are cool in their own right, there was nothing cool to get from them, like no cool weapons or anything, but at least they had the decency to put a counter.
Well, you did get that super awesome cape that made everybody hate you.
Ah, that's why I remember I didn't get that, because now that I think about it, I went through, collected every single one of them, but I'd been stupid enough to collect one accidentally at the beginning, so I ended up with 99 out of 100 feathers, not knowing where the final one was, even though I knew it was in somewhere like Venice, but or it was in the biggest town, and I was like, I just cannot be bothered. So that was the end of that one for me, no cape.
Ah, you missed all that for one feather.
Yeah, no, I was really gutted, actually.
You can't just go back and get it?
Well, it tells me that it's in, like, I know it's in Florence somewhere, or something like that, but the hours I would have to spend parade, like, trying to find the specific, or going through, like, a list of where each of them were to see if I got it, I just don't know if I can be dealing with that.
It's pretty, it's worth it, though. That particular cape is really funny.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad I missed out.
Yeah, I mean, it's the cape that makes everybody hate you.
Just the best cape ever.
Yeah, you put it on and all of a sudden everybody says, that guy needs to die. And then all the soldiers in the town come after you at the same time.
That guy right there. I've taken an instant dislike to him.
Yeah, that's what it does. It's pretty cool.
Damn.
Yeah, no, and another big thing is save points. Like, I know a lot of bad games will not give you save points at convenient points in the game.
Mm.
It's so unnerving.
Or make you rely on saving it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like being able to save whenever I want to.
No, I like that too, don't get me wrong. But when they make you, like, that's your only way of saving the game. Like, they don't auto-save at all. So, like, if you're, you know, on level 5 and you haven't saved yet, you die. You go back to level 1 because you haven't saved it yet.
You're looking for something like Half-Life 2, where there's an auto-save, but then you can also save on your own.
Right. Like, if you have an auto-save at certain points, and then you can save on your own at certain point, like, whenever you want. At least then, when you die, you don't go all the way back to your last save, which, who knows when that is.
Yeah. It's just more assurance.
Yeah, I think it just makes things difficult to contend with. Because, you know, if you're fighting monsters and you're collecting weapons and things like that, now you got to worry about saving, too.
I don't like having to go to a save point. I find it very aggravating when I have to... I think Dead Space is like that. You have to find the save point. You have to go all the way back. And then, you know, go all the way through these hallways. And then, oh, there's a save machine. And then you go save, you know. And they've done better in the newer games. They're more conveniently positioned. There are more of them. And I like that a lot. So that's okay for me. But what really, really boils my blood is checkpoint saving. I have to achieve a checkpoint to save. So basically what that means is that if I do this whole part after that last checkpoint and I die, I have to redo the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all. I like checkpoint saving and the ability to save. I think that's great. Do that. But don't just have it be checkpoint. Because there are a lot of things that happen between checkpoint A and checkpoint B. And certain checkpoints may be harder than others. And you may need to save it. So that aggravates me more than save points or auto saves. I hate checkpoint saving.
Physical save points used to be the only way I could get away with playing games like really late, because my mom would be like, get off the Xbox. I've got to find a save point, mom. And she let me get away with it, and I really would, and I'd sit there, like, and I was actually looking for one. Like, it became quite desperate, because, like, she was screaming from upstairs, because I was still on, and I was like, but Mom, I haven't got a save point, oh God. And you'd have to, like, run around and panic. So, it went both ways. I really hated it, because it was really panicky, because I thought she might just come downstairs and, like, turn it off, and I'd cry. But, and also just, yeah, used to let me get away with quite a lot, actually, thinking back.
All right, well, moving in the opposite direction, is there anything that you like about, you know, gameplay elements that you like about games?
Well, I think pretty much, like, yeah, the opposite of what we just said. Checkpoints, they're great. And everything that makes a good game.
Well, that's the thing about checkpoints. Now, I just spent, like, the past couple minutes dogging them and saying how horrible they are. But now I'll jump on the other side of the coin and say, when you do get through all the hard stuff through point A and B, you're really happy to reach a checkpoint. It's sort of like the reward that you get. And, you know, obviously you're dreading the next one, but it's sort of in Gears of War or Duke Nukem or anything like that. It was nice to reach it. So yeah, there's two sides of the coin when it comes to checkpoints.
I'll go out there and say that something that I really enjoy, I sort of like being engrossed in a game where, like, the action, everything just happens so fast that you can't help but just get sucked into the game, and you kind of, like, lose track of time. In particular, I like God of War for that fact. You know, it's kind of a button masher, but I don't really notice it's a button masher because enemies are coming at me from every which angle, and I'm just kind of forced to react, where I have no time to think. It's just react, 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 and then before I know it, I've played the game for like an hour and a half, and I got to go to work the next day, and like, oh, got to turn this off.
Hey, see, I'm a big fan of in-game unlockables, like you being able to, you know, unlock things outside of things necessary for the story to move forward. Mass Effect 2 was particularly good at that, you know, where you can use in-game currency to unlock certain things that you have interest in. You know, if you happen to like using a certain weapon, you can unlock new technology to make that weapon better, or to kind of, like, you know, customize your experience a little more.
I love customization in general. I think every game should have that. Like, it doesn't matter what sex you are, but, like, buying clothes for your character is just, like, the best thing ever. It's not girls. It's not just girls. I'm sure many a guy who spends hours just decking out their Fable character or something just to look as cool as they can. I love that, like, that extra sort of facet of making your character your own. Mass Effect, actually. I haven't played Mass Effect 2 yet, unfortunately. But yeah, Mass Effect was like that. And Fable, of course, all these sort of, the RPGs, obviously, where customization is really important. But, oh, sorry, I just threw a pen across my room. But when you can just sort of buy so many clothes, or like, even hairstyles. I don't know what it is about hairstyles, but I love a good hairstyle.
Yeah, I also forgot to mention the things that we hate, that I hate multiplayer modes for the sake of lengthening a game.
Yeah, it sucks. If it's not good, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, every game nowadays, they feel like they got to have multiplayer in it in one form or another. And, you know, not all games are made out to have multiplayer in it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I feel like the Red Dead Redemption multiplayer, I've never played that because it feels to me really out of place with the story and really awkward to me. I don't know, maybe I should try it. It's probably quite good, but I sort of never really had the urge to try it because I felt like I got so emotionally invested in the story and I thought it was such a good game. I was like, oh no, I don't think it's going to work for me.
Well, you know, with the multiplayer in that particular game, it really doesn't do anything to the story.
Yeah.
It just allows you to play around in the environment.
Actually, that can be quite cool if you, because it did have pretty good, great graphics. The environments were really lovely.
Yeah, no, one thing I really liked to do in Red Dead Redemption was to go to one of the forts, you know, go in there, kill everybody in the fort, and then they have cannons on the top of the fort and just blow everything up.
I never did that.
Yeah, it's cool because you can lock yourself in the fort, especially if you have people to kind of help protect you. You can just have, like, one person up top just using that cannon and killing everybody. And then, you know, one person just shooting the stray, you know, policeman that gets in there. You know, but but multiplayer modes in particular that just lengthen the game is just, I just hate it. Like, you know, Dead Space 2 seemed to have a pretty useless multiplayer mode now. I mean, you seem to have played that quite a bit now, Trevor.
Yeah, I don't play the Dead Space 2 multiplayer. I'm not a big fan of multiplayers. And when I buy a game and the multiplayer is more important than single player, it upsets me a lot. I'm a single player guy, so I haven't even touched the Dead Space 2 multiplayer. I figured it would be very similar to like the Left 4 Dead multiplayer, where you could play either side, be a necromorph or be a human, and I just really didn't have much care for it.
Yeah, I don't think it does much to the story either. Huh?
But if we're talking about multiplayers, you want a good element or a good multiplayer, look at Portal 2. Now there's a multiplayer that complements the game and basically serves as its own game. It's a co-op. So, you know, multiplayers are changing. They're becoming more and more interesting and more involved with the game. And they seem to be replacing single player, slowly but surely, more and more becoming online, more and more becoming multiplayer, more and more becoming co-op. So we're definitely getting better in that department.
All right. So I think that is going to do it for us today. So why don't you let us know how people can get a hold of you, Trevor?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Vago Games, or you can visit my website at www.vagogames.com.
And what about for you, Minnie? How can they find you?
I'm on Twitter all the time at Minnie Little, but my you can also find me at www.gamingsymmetry.com. That's my main website.
And both all that information will be in the show notes. And of course, if you want to find more information about us at New Gamer Nation, you can do any of the following. You can go to our website at newgamernation.com. You can follow us on Twitter at newgamernation. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/newgamernation. We now have our own Android app. So for everybody out there that has an Android, please go onto the Android marketplace and find our app. Just type in New Gamer Nation and it will come right up. And for those that haven't done so yet, please go to our iTunes section and leave a comment and rate the show. Really helps us out and makes more people aware of us in general. So again, I would like to thank our guests for joining us today. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed, and we will talk to you next week.